Hello, everybody.
That time again for another episode of the show that you just clicked on. This is Paul Mercurio. Thanks for checking it out. A couple of things. I can't load a dishwasher. It's not because I'm a guy. I don't have the patience. The certain dishes have to go in certain places, and then why can't I put the fork up? I have to put the fork up. I can't put it down into the little bucket. The bucket has holes in the side, so water's going to get in through the side. I don't understand why there's so many rules. It's just a tedium, and then I had to uncoil a rope that was all tangled, and I almost killed myself three times with a butter knife and then a pencil. If I had a gun, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I can't. I don't have the patience. My wife's totally, I can't do anything that. And then when I have eggs, I can't have two pieces of toast toasted at the same time. I can only have one piece of toast toasted, because if you do two, by the time you get to the second one, it's hard. It's like a giant crouton, and nobody needs that in their life. I mean, what's the point in living if you're going to have that? So you have to have somebody standing by the toaster, and you give them kind of the signal, like the manager going to the bullpen, and then and that toast comes out hot. And bang. And by someone, I mean, you know, somebody in my family who I'm supporting or who is at least in the same house with me. Got a new dog, Daisy. She's a girl, and she's a whore, because when she falls asleep, she'll sleep on her back with her legs open. And she's gonna catch a disease from another dog who's just gonna nail her. You know what I mean? You can't sleep like that. Your vagina just hanging out there. For me to take pictures of and post. No, I'm kidding. I didn't do that. But she's cute. Big licker. She likes to be like hugged, and you give her kisses and all that stuff. Anyway, okay. So she's a cool dog so far. And we'll see. If not, you know, the door may be left open and that dog may suddenly not be around. No, I wouldn't do that. Let's see what else. I got a decision to make. I think the way I come down on this is anybody who will not, and I think I've touched on this before, and it never stops, will not get move out of the doorway, like when a subway door opens, a train door, an elevator door, and they want to be right next to the opening in case, you know, there's a fire or something, I don't know. And so they're impeding the ability of other people to get into that room, subway car, train car, elevator. If you won't move out of the way a little bit of the doorway, your civil rights should be taken away from you. You can't vote. You have to pay double in taxes. That and like when you're sort of going down the aisle in the airplane and one guy's got his leg crossed and that leg is sticking out and he won't move it. And you got to kind of snake around them, and the width of the aisle is already like a foot. So now you got to do like, you only got 6 inches to maneuver around the guy with the Gucci loafers. And I think that's about it right now. I've got other things that are bothering me. I got flat feet and my orthotics aren't really working, and they like $300, and I don't know why I can't get them, you know, on my healthcare plan. Oh, I know why. Because there's no decent fucking healthcare plan. That's why. To get. All right. Enjoy my episode coming up here. It's with Lauren Zander. She's a good friend and a life coach. I know some people think, oh, life coach, you know, what is that? It's like a therapist on steroids who verbally beats the shit out of you till you get your act together. But she's really good, and she really does sort of have the ability to get people to kind of set goals and achieve them. And there's a little something different, and it's also fun and funny. She's really great. So enjoy it. Thanks for checking out the podcast, and we'll see you next week. Hey everybody, thanks for joining the podcast this week. This is a special dear old, first of all, it's a returning guest on the podcast and a very, very, very close dear friend who I love a lot, and who's helped me and or tried to help me in my life with coaching so that I'd get out of my own head and get my head out of my own ass. It's lovely Lauren Zander, president, founder of Handel Group. She is a life coach, a beautiful human being, and she has a book out called Maybe It's You. But the next part of the title I like even better: Cut the Crap, Face Your Fears, Love Your Life. And it's on Amazon now, and you should get this book. Even if you think you have your shit together, you don't. Hi, Lauren Zander.
Hey there.
Nice to have you on the show again.
Thank you. Thank you. I am a co-founder. I am a co-founder and the chairwoman.
Okay, co-founder and chairwoman.
I refuse to do more work than that.
Yeah, I get you. You and I want to talk about the book. Just so people understand, you call yourself a life coach. It's not something you majored in college, and I know kind of how you kind of sort of came to this world of work that you do, but explain to people sort of how this door opened for you and why it opened for you and what you saw when it was there, when that door opened.
Well, the first thing I always try to explain to people is it wasn't there when I started, right? Like I'm one of the pioneers of life coaching. And I've been doing it since the late 90s. I think I even get to say 20 years now of pioneering a field that now actually really does exist. How it started was I was, getting trained. I was a seminar leader for some other company and wasn't happy and basically would rather, wasn't thinking it was causing real change the way I wanted it to cause change in an individual's life. And so I left and like hung out my little shingle and started one at a time.
And this other company was sort of scratching the surface of this industry, right? Of this sort of way
They
of.
weren't in life coaching. They were in, self-help seminars, more towards the Tony Robbins flavor,
Right. What is the
right?
di what is the, for people who don't know, what is the difference between a self-help slash Tony Robbins and, because you also do seminars as part of this, and I've actually done a couple of days, well, retreat or whatever you call it, that is sort of in that world of seminars, but like, what is the difference between the two?
I think it's, I, there's probably not a lot of difference. It's like the difference is in the content,
Right.
right? When I left, the company's name was Landmark Education. When I left Landmark, I really, they teach three or five principles. And I didn't think that was getting a person to deeply change their life. Right, it was a better life. Like they were happier, they had more, they had some capacities to change, but it was so insufficient for what I wanted to see possible with an individual.
Well, you were seeing results that told you that, or was it just your instinct that it wasn't really helping people in a deep way?
It was helping people deeply in a philosophical, emotional way with being with themselves. But, were they still 75 pounds overweight? Were they still cheating on their wife? Were they still smoking a cigarette? Were they still hating their father? Well, they sent one letter. It's better-ish, right? So it was nothing was deep enough for my taste.
So, in other words, it was sort of like they were being coached or whatever you want to
They
call
were in a
it.
seminar.
They were in a
They were
seminar.
taking
So, like, they were
coaching classes.
right. So they were sort of doing stuff that felt like they were doing something, but they were it wasn't really anything that was going to stick in your mind that was going to make it
No,
true.
I don't think that's probably fair. It was doing whatever it was doing, and people were doing whatever they were doing with it. You could call me more of a like wanting to have direct impact, way more specifically.
Okay, got it.
Right. So I cared way more about a person's specifics, like what they were doing every minute of the day, how they were thinking, why they were thinking things that hurt them. Right. Like I just wanted to do a whole lot more work on diving deeper.
And so you, I know Neville is a big is a philosopher, is one of the pillars of your approach, but you we did you sort of develop this approach sort of as you were going? I mean, you obviously in
Now,
working,
Paul,
yeah, right,
Neville was who you needed desperately.
yeah, but
I
you
would not call Neville you know, like I could have a client for years who doesn't even know we have a.
Oh, you use different ones for different. I got you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's a variety of tools in my toolbox. Mm. I, you know, teach people. Mm. And yours was how, you know, how you focus and how you talk about life.
Like, right.
And thought of, you know, in a deep way, the words you were saying to yourself were critical.
Right.
So you needed to get the impact that that was having on your life. And then this philosophy of everything you're thinking really does manifest.
Yes.
Was designed to scare the shit out of you to cut it out.
Right. Because I was sort of at a place where there was a lot of focus on things that weren't working out or things weren't going to happen. There's a lot of negativity and saying it can't, I won't. Less about sort of my belief in my own abilities, but my belief that it's going to work out. And so we did a lot of work on me changing that conversation. And you would even give me punishments that I would have to impose on myself. I threw money away on the subway platform.
No, that was not a punishment. It was a consequence.
A consequence. Okay. I still call it a punishment, but, and so people need to know that I have some experience and, a lot of experience, and you worked a lot with me on sort of getting me into a better headspace about, like, you know, because look, life is a lot of sort of rejection and humps that you got to get over, especially as a performer in the entertainment business. So
yeah.
But did you know, like, when you, and I know we've talked about some of this, you know, just off air personally, but I just want people to know, when you started, you had some, I guess, obviously experiences that you knew and understood how to deal with from Landmark, but then as you're going along with your first client and so forth, that you sort of you've developed your own method.
Yeah.
From, I think, all of, you know, obviously Handel is its own method, but then as you're going along, are you sort of having different experiences with different clients and then building this method? How did that sort of play itself out?
Well, I think the funny joke I tell that's true, maybe not funny for anybody listening, but was that they called me a parasite before I left Landmark.
Really?
Because I didn't realize, I didn't know I was doing anything I shouldn't have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
But because Landmark runs runs on volunteers,
mm-hmm.
so I had to run a volunteer program.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would do, which no one knew what I was doing, but I would run a volunteer program by starting to coach everyone individually. Like, I had started inventing everything I do when I left,
mm-hmm.
unbeknownst to anyone, including me,
mm-hmm.
because I was just providing value.
So you, because you were doing seminars with Landmark, but then you were doing one-on-one coaching with those people in those seminars.
Yeah. It was, no, I had a volunteer program that I could run on my own time, not their seminars.
Right.
And so people would show up on Saturday for 3 hours. I would book a room. No one knew what I was doing in the room. Nobody cared.
Mm.
As long as I had a volunteer program that was bustling, no one asked what I was doing.
Mm.
And what I was doing was I was inventing content.
Mm-hmm.
And I really just was having a ball making people happy. Right, getting them to promise to exercise, getting them to promise to do this, getting them to deal with their father. Like, I started dealing with really where Landmark didn't pick up, I picked up.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and it was there for me when I was 23. Like, I was, you know, I'm 47, and this was when I was 23.
Mm.
Right, and so I just start, you know, and it was such a, you know, busy place. It wasn't like I was doing something wrong.
Right.
No one knew, and I was just doing my thing.
And you didn't think you were doing anything wrong. You thought the opposite. You thought you were...
And so when I gave notice that I was leaving, and I gave a year notice because of this volunteer program, I had 100 people volunteering with me in this program where I was coaching them individually in groups, putting them in buddies, like getting them to deal with all their life, which was not happening anywhere at Landmark, right?
Mm.
And then when I went to go transfer it to the person that was taking over my job, I got caught. Right, like everyone was like, "What are you doing?"
Oh, you were basically giving them the benefits of your sort of self training or whatever.
Yeah, that's when I found out that they thought I was a jerk.
Oh, okay.
Right, I got in trouble.
Right,
I really got in trouble. Right, like I, and that was like the the wild, like, revelation that I was doing something no one knew,
mm-hmm.
and that they didn't want it.
Crazy.
And what are you doing? And this is not what we do here. You're like practicing your own thing on these people. And so it was true. And so when I left, it was like this revelation that I had already been building content. I really was. Like, I was so, I wasn't very far from who I am today, but in the 20 years that it's been, I've been able to make it smarter and smarter and smarter.
Right.
More and more effective.
Right.
And train other people that I really had something that I understood about how to teach a person to be powerful in their own life.
And this is what I love about you, the balls that you have sort of, are you going home some nights going, boy, I'm kind of winging it, and I'm hoping that what I just told Sally Smith today about her weight issues or whatever is the right approach? Like, where are you getting, I mean, you obviously have a tremendous amount of confidence, and you had been doing it, but still you're 23, and also you haven't lived life at 23 that much, right? Nobody has. So are you having any... And I know I'm going to laugh saying this, that Lauren Zander would have any doubts about herself, but like, are you like saying to myself, all right, I'm kind of winging it here. And like, where is this coming from? I mean, obviously you have a little experience, but where is it coming from that you feel comfortable you're doing the right thing?
My mother
mm-hmm.
right now mm-hmm. and asked her the same question. She would tell you that I have been doing what I've been doing since I was 5 years old to the next door neighbor.
Coaching.
Yeah, like, why do you think that? Don't you understand this? Can't you see that? Like, I used to, there's a kid that I once met, like, there many, many years, like almost recently, that remembers me at 11 stopping my parents in a fight.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And making them stop.
Mm-hmm.
Telling them what they weren't getting that the other one was really saying.
I'm laughing because I could totally see you doing this. This is hilarious.
Saying it back to them both. They actually heard me and got it. So the guy, his name was Mark Cashin. Mark was like, he couldn't even believe that that was even possible, let alone a little 11-year-old was doing it. And he was 17. Right? He was in shock. And he still remembers it to this day. So what you would, the balls on me have not changed.
So where did that... That's just something you're born with? Like, where did you have the perception at 11, 12 to be able to see what the issue is and then express it and vocalize it?
Yeah, so, you know, if I ask you when did you get you were funny, Paul?
Yeah, I don't know, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How long ago might that have been?
Yeah.
How long?
Well, I guess it was there. It was dormant. My mom says I was quiet. It was dormant when I was a kid but high school, it kind of started to come out, I think. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Okay. Right.
So there's, you know, people have, you know, ingrained gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Really, like things that come utterly natural to them. And then whether you fulfill on that gift or not is another matter.
Mm-hmm.
But people have plenty of talent. So this was just, you know, my gift for being ballsy and communicating and talking to anyone and feeling entitled to get to look you in the eye and ask you the most transparent question, like that you're not allowed to ask, taboo land. I've been in taboo land, you know, since I could talk.
Right.
Right.
So that answers the question sort of how at 23 is you're starting to sort of branch out to this one-on-one coaching. You weren't putting your head on the pillow at night going, gee, I wonder if that, what I did today made sense. You obviously had to be making some mistakes along the way and figure it out. But you, for the most part, felt like you were developing something that made sense to you and you felt very confident was going to work for people.
You know, I'm even more arrogant than that.
You? Really?
No, go ahead. More arrogant. Here's what I'll tell you is the difference between me back then and me now.
Yeah.
I had to talk a lot more back then.
Wow, I didn't think that was possible.
Like, I'm faster and can get to the point.
Yeah.
And pierce something.
Yeah, that's the only part that's aggravating about you is like sometimes you cut me off and you won't let me finish my thought about what I'm feeling. And then you would cut me off and then I'd get frustrated. And then you'd be like, I already know, stop talking. I'm like, how can you know? I just started. And then it's like, I'm like arguing with my wife. That would be frustrating.
Yes, but you are quite a looper.
No, I'm not. I can't get it out. See, you just did it again. I can't get it out once.
You paused, Paul. Come on.
I would have Lauren had these things called buckets for me, and I would go, she would call them, she would label them buckets. And so I would go into a bucket, and then I'd be, meaning like I was, you know, kind of having a pity party. See, I know, I remember all the terminology.
That's right.
About like, you know, I can't do this, and then I don't. And then I try to explain to her, like, well, how am I supposed to see me? She would want me to manifest. So for people listening, it'd be like, you know, I want my own TV show. See yourself having your pitch meeting at the network and then shaking hands with the people at the table and then see yourself on the set. And then I'd try that and it didn't work. And then I'd say, your method sucks and it's not working. And then she'd be like, well, because you're not doing it. And then she'd yell at me and then. It then I got better at it, but yes, you can talk, but sometimes you got to let people get their stuff out, even if you think you don't need to hear it. That's all.
That's what we're talking about today, Paul.
No, I'm just trying to get. See, you can't even take constructive criticism.
I'm just okay.
No, you don't need to share. Your thing is working great. You built a huge company. What do I know? So you knew, and then you started to hit on something. And then when you're sort of talking to these people, especially at this young age, you also don't have the life experience. Like, you know, I'm Catholic. I was raised Catholic. And it was like, I always say that priests should be able to marry so that they could actually give, you know, grounded, reality-based guidance for people about marital issues and raising their family and all of that. And so at 23, you know, you date, blah, 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 but like you're not married, you don't have kids. Like, where are you getting that life experience to be able to turn around and tell somebody how to deal with their problem in their 20-year marriage or how they're dealing with their child or whatever it might be?
That's a good question. Let's see. I would go back to that I actually had an insane amount of knowledge that I didn't understand I had.
Right.
Like I really, it didn't matter. And I really was able to fix marriages even in my 20s.
Yeah. And I'm not suggesting you weren't able to. I'm reveling in it more. I'm honoring it.
It didn't require that for some reason. Right. And then if you go, well, why not? You know, so if I was coaching people on their kids, even though I didn't have them, which means that there's a bunch, like right now I can coach people on postpartum depression and getting pregnant and all these things because I have three kids. And now I have been married for 20 years, right? But so yes, I have a lot more content available to me to make a difference with people with knowing as much more as I know now because of my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so I'm much smarter now with what I've been through. So you can never take that away.
Right.
So that's true. Right. And the book that I wrote now is a much better book than if I wrote it 10 years ago. Right. Like there's no question it's so much smarter.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But back in the day, the principles that I teach are, you know, people lie. Right. And all the ways you lie rob you from having authentic relationships. That's not, you know.
Yeah. You say there's a quote, people are not in love with being alive. There's so much suffering. Life sucks for so many people and they're faking it. And they lie because they just can't deal with the reality of things aren't the way they'd like them to be. Why do they lie?
People don't trust the truth. People don't.
Explain. And I know what you mean by that, but explain that in terms of like, in other words, if you have a problem with somebody, instead of just going to and going to them and saying, look, I have this problem with you, blah, 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 people would rather pretend like everything's fine because they want to avoid the confrontation because they fear that there are going to be negative ramifications to it.
Yes, that's what, like, oh, there is a series of justifications, right? So one is, you know, is always they can't handle the truth. Right, whoever they are.
They being the person that you're having this issue with, not the person you're coaching. Yeah.
So
okay.
You take your fear and you wipe it on them. Right? So I have a fear that if I tell my husband I'm unhappy with X, he'll blow up at me, he'll bring this up, he'll do that. Like whatever I make up his answer. Right? So I am puppeting people. Right? And in my little world, I run a bunch of puppets.
And that's a cop out to you.
That is a delusion, right? That is why the world isn't working, right? Because there's so much fake, like there's a, it's all postured, right? You, like even your husband doesn't know how you like sex and it's been 8 years, right? Like you can't even talk about that because you're going to disappoint him and then you're going to scare him and then he's going to lose his erection and you're, and then you don't really care that much and you really are fantasizing about the guy you really want to fuck. Like the whole thing is a disaster in that head of yours. And so you can't start telling the truth, you think, right? Because it'll unravel so many things that you're not saying or facing and haven't since the beginning of that relationship. Right? So people get in serious binds being a fake.
Right.
Right? So you so to get someone to start to, and then watch this, right? That voice in your head that is making a mess in your relationship and letting you get away with being fake and not telling the truth also gets the cocktail at night, right? Needs three drinks to, you know, and to blow off steam, right? So the collusion going on in that brain of yours, in that head of yours, gets your vices connected. Like it all is running a big muck.
So you start to, you know, say, you know what, I'm going to give myself this three slices of pizza at 11 o'clock at night because I deserve it because I'm having a tough day. And instead of, oh, gotcha, right. So you use that as a, yeah.
So the, there's, so what happens in the book or what happens through the method is I basically call a very serious timeout. I like timeout.
Right.
Let's do some planning, thinking, addressing, facing. You know, the joke I make is I do three things, right? One is I'm a spiritual accountant. I make you do your books, like spiritually speaking, karmically speaking, you start to go, I'm still mad at this person. I never address this. I'm still like everything that you're holding on to is sitting with you.
Yeah, you give me that annoying scale of 1 to 10 question. So where are you on 1 to 10? And then if I say to you, I'm better, you have to be careful when you work with Lauren. You say, I think I'm better now. And then she'll go, okay, where are you on the scale? Where are you? And then it's like, ah, shit, there's going to be a number on this. And then so, and then this party wants to just lie. So then you like, don't get yelled at. And then the other party's like, you can't lie. That defeats the purpose. But yes, you're big on sort of the first step here, which you call is making people aware of where they currently are with this stuff, right?
You ready? It's called telling the truth.
Right, right.
I swear no one's teaching it on earth, right. Really.
Why do you think that is in the bigger sense, larger sense of things? And do you think it's changed at all from our parents' generation? Or you think it was even worse? And this has been an ongoing thing for a long, long time.
I think it's a lot. You know, I think that explains the divorce rate.
Right.
Nobody gets married to get divorced.
Right.
No one, you know, like no one gets fat because they prefer it.
Right.
No one, you know, wakes up with a hangover every morning because that sounds like fun. Right. Like, so people are, that goes back to the people are really unhappy and they don't deeply know why. They might be making the money they want. They have the two kids in the backyard. Like there's really nothing wrong. They should be grateful. Except they have to live with the voice in their head and how they look in the mirror and how they're lying. And so that, and then you need your vices. So it's like, if I was going to pin it to anything, it's that people can't tell the truth to themselves or others, really. And then you're not being true to what you really wish you were being true to because you haven't even designed it.
Right.
Right. And if you started to design what you want to be true to, your laziness is in a lot of trouble. Or you're keeping everybody else happy, but not yourself happy, is in a lot of, like all of a sudden your personality and how you organize the puppet show would be in a lot of trouble because what would really make you happy is not to run it like that at all. Right? Like, you really want to go get a job, but you're, you know, you have this whole concept of family, and if you went and got a job, then, you know, you'd be just like your mother.
Right.
So then there's all this crazy cockamamie is what I actually call it. And you've never sorted through it and really had someone help you think about how to think about it all, because we just don't learn that in school.
Mm-hmm.
We don't learn that anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And unless your parents were really good at it,
right?
You have all your parents' issues.
Right.
Even worse, right? Sorry. I'm sorry. That's chapter 8.
Right. When you say people are not in love with being alive, there's so much suffering. This is a quote of yours. Life sucks for so many people and they're faking it.
Yeah.
Do you find fake it because, like, and I've done it, and it's sort of out of, I think, fear that I'm going to push the person away. Like, there's somebody that I work with in my life, and every time I talk to him, it's always about him and how great he is and something we just did together, but it always circles back to how great he is. And then also a comment on how he's trying to teach me to be as good as him. And it's annoying. And I kind of want to say something about it, but I'm also fearful that he tends to be very volatile. And if I do that, it might alienate him. Is that what you're talking about, faking it?
Yes.
Whereas I should, you know, a person in that situation like myself should just say, hey, this is bothering me about our relationship. We can get past it if we talk about it, which is what
I teach people how to say it as best you can.
Yeah.
Like, I teach, like, there really is the best way to frame an issue so that you're not accusing someone of something, but you're telling on yourself for thinking something. So you would say to whoever, like, hey, I have a confession. Please don't kill me. They may kill you anyway, but please don't kill me. It's my confession. I just want to admit it because it's starting to, like, bother me in a way that I just want to tell on myself. So at least you know I get nutty about this.
And then you would say when to finish that. And I'm not trying to get coaching here. I'm giving you my situation
I'm giving you coaching.
So people can see how this works. So then I would say to the person, hey, when we talk, you tend to do X, Y, and Z. No. Go ahead.
No, that still has accusation in it.
All right.
Right. What every person needs to really understand is what you think is happening and how you think it's happening and how you remember it or feel about it doesn't mean it's true for the other person.
Yes, I've found that a lot. Yeah.
Yes. And you're wiping all your version of reality on them, which is keeping you from having to say anything, which is keeping you, like, it's running your own loop of being disappointed in people's self-centeredness, right? And so what you would do is go, hey, I am a very sensitive, you know, comedian, ha, 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 right? And so I want to share with you what triggers me, whether you even know you're doing it or not. I don't think you're doing it maliciously, or I actually think you're committed to helping me, and I'm just confessing a way I get triggered.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is that okay? And he goes, yes, get permission. And then you go, okay, ready? Here's what I always pay attention to and always get stuck with. We start talking or going over a postmortem on how we're doing, and then it always lands back at you, and you're always telling me how you're teaching me, and I start to roll my eyes. So one, I apologize, like, it's true, I'm rolling my eyes at you a bunch. Can you feel it? Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then part two, can you do me a favor? I am that sensitive. Can you notice that in the future for me?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Do me a favor and help me out by not triggering me. Right? It's not your fault. You're a jerk. You're self-centered.
Yeah, but here's the thing with this, okay? And you and I talked about this before when we were sort of, you would coach me regularly. It feels a little bullshitty. Like, it's sort of, and let me get this out. Don't cut me off. You're all about not faking it, being real and being honest. And you're asking me to manufacture a way to deliver the message that's not really true to how I feel. Like, and I feel like now I'm sort of pretending so that he won't get mad at me, but then I can get what I want out of him instead of just going, I got like 14 examples of you just lecturing the shit out of me, and I wouldn't say exactly like this, but I'd be a little bit more honest that it's not me putting my stuff on him, it's really him doing this. So that's the part.
Okay, if you pause right there, Paul.
Yeah.
Then you're assuming that all data that you're collecting is the only way to collect the data.
In other words, he's got a different perception of what's happening. And he might say, God, I'm sorry, I had no idea I was doing that. It never was my intention. That's what you're saying.
I am telling you, you may be wrong.
Right.
You may be focusing. You may be, like, you hear what, like, when people talk to me, they can lift out whatever they want from the conversation, remember it however they remember it,
yeah.
And they would swear on a Bible their version is accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And for example, even though, I'm just going with this,
mm-hmm.
You don't even know what you said to him that asked him to tell you what he thought you should do differently. You don't even know you teed him up.
Wait, when did I tee him up? I never, like, if I never had this conversation.
Remember the conversation like it was filmed. You just don't, Paul. And you relate to your brain and your own inner dialogue like it's a genius and is taking into account everything. But it really is always taking into account your neuroses.
Well, right. I think what you're saying is, again, this is for people listening, is he might say, well, yeah, maybe it might have felt like a lecture, but it was because for the 14th time you kept doing this thing that I told you not to do. So you're saying I leave that part of the dialogue out of my brain is what you're saying. Is that right?
100%.
See, I know, I learned. See, I could do this. I could coach people now.
Right. you're so, and then what really happens, Paul, is when you don't tell when you're not upset. Like, hey, don't lecture me. Right?
That's a big, that's always been a big thing for me. Yeah. That's been,
right. So
yeah.
Because you didn't interrupt him on the first or second time he did it, when it started being something that you didn't want to hear, you just didn't tell him the truth in the moment. Like, okay, I totally got it. Don't tell me anymore.
Mm.
Right. So now it's, 2 years later and you think he's a self-centered lecturer who knows better than you,
mm-hmm.
but you don't realize that you were part of that equation the whole time. Mm. So I don't know what's true. You don't know what's true, so I'm not creating BS.
Right.
I'm actually making you deal with, you have no idea.
Right, right.
Right? And you're not trying to have a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You're trying to resolve something.
And are you saying people faking it then because they're afraid? You know, my situation of faking it would be, I think, because I'm afraid to... You know, we talked about fears when we worked together, and that I'm going to lose the person. They're going to
yes.
leave me, whether it's a wife or a boss or a consultant, an agent, whatever you want to call it. They're going to
right.
leave me if I'm honest, and then I'm going to be alone. And do you find, is that what you mean by why people fake it? Is that a big reason why people fake it?
It's all like it's one of the main facets that people have to posture
mm-hmm.
is because they believe some theory, right? That people will leave you, right?
So
once you have a theory, people will leave you, and then your game in life your is to never let someone you like leave you, or never let someone important to you leave you. So then you're always tap dancing, and then you're always noticing whatever you know. Like it's all. A full-blown reality show.
Right. Right.
In your head.
Right.
And then so goes the puppet show.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But you are, the whole point that I teach people is you're running all the narrative, including the way you interpret what they're saying. Because you don't even check on that. Right. You don't go, do you think I suck? Did I mistake this before? Like, you're just not engaged in the moment,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you're scared he's going to leave you, right? So then you want to keep him happy. So then you have to tap dance. So your personality, so what I call all of this in the book is really that you need to understand your traits,
mm.
right? So everybody has positive and negative personality traits.
Mm-hmm.
And they all are more like dials, right? Like they're not going anywhere,
mm.
right? If you're stubborn, you're stubborn. You're going to be working on your stubbornness. And, you know, and you may be stubborn at a level called a 9. Right? Oh, you're religious. Right? And then if you, you know, but you want to, you know, your kid's not. And now you have to deal with how stubborn you are and want to have a relationship with your kid. So you're going to have to really dial that trait down to a 3 to have a great relationship with your gay son. Right? So, and you have no choice, or you're going to be stubborn, stay the same, and have a terrible relationship. Right? So what happens is people get, because life is happening and things become really important, called your relationships, money, your body, like things start to become acute problems where you're going to have to deal with your personality and start to dial it in and dial it out. Right? So you could be, call yourself an introvert, and it's really not going to work in this day and age for your business life.
Right.
And so you're going to find out that there's no such thing as being stuck being an introvert. Right. That's not going to get you, you know, more money in your career.
Right. Which means you've got to get yourself out of that bucket.
Right. And then you figure out it's a narrative in that mind of yours. Guess what? It's exactly like that mother of yours. And if you made a promise and put in a consequence, to really go make coffee dates or bring people coffee at your office and start to connect with people, everything about your introvert would have gotten screwed, right? All of a sudden, it's playing with people.
And explain what a consequence is for people listening.
Okay, so the best... a consequence is an, like it's something you... So you make a promise. I promise to run 4 times a week. My cute one that I always use, which is true, is I promise to have sex twice a week. And if I don't have sex twice a week with my husband, I lose whatever TV show or, you know, Amazon, Netflix, I lose whatever show I'm obsessed with, and I never get the episode back. So I could lose 2 shows a week that are my favorites.
Right.
Okay. A consequence is something that really will not hurt you, but will piss off your vice.
But I could make the argument that it's sex with your husband. That's such a fundamental thing in your life and your relationship. You shouldn't need this sort of manufactured motivator to do it.
Have you met the human being?
All right. Yeah. Okay.
I have no idea who you're talking about on Earth. There is not the list of... the list of people who wish they could make promises and keep them that they're not in areas that they wish were better.
Right.
Have everything to do with laziness, procrastination, you know, just ungrateful, right? Like a natural dark side. Right. Human beings are dark. We're not all dark, but there's a part that's dark. Would I rather watch TV or connect with my husband? Do you know, I even need a promise. Ready? Don't everybody balk. To play with my kids.
Yeah.
To actually play with what they want to do, not just go get my hair done.
Because, you know, you're saying, and you don't feel bad about that, you're saying because you're a human being, that's kind of what you need to do.
I have traits. Right? I can be incredibly self-centered.
Right.
Right? I have a rule that when I come home, right, I have a rule that I absolutely keep, a promise that I keep, that I'm not allowed to just go on about what happened with my day at all, not even first. David tells me everything first. I have to wait till he goes, what happened today for you?
Why? It's because you can't stop talking?
Yes.
No, but why is that? Seriously.
Like I like to share, like I'm a sharing fool. Like you're not gonna believe what happened today. I'm a girl, right? I'm that girl.
Right.
I want to tell you everything. I love you. I want you to know. I want you to gasp with me. I want you to come on the ride with me.
Right.
Especially David. Like I love him. I love him to know everything. Okay. And I have exciting shit that happened today, right? Like I'm having fun.
Right.
This is not. I want to tell you all my problems. I want to tell you all the good stuff.
Right.
Right. So I don't have many people I share my good stuff with. I really don't. Right. My kids don't care. That's lovely.
Well, you got your sisters.
Definitely. But I also have, like, but I also have my husband.
Right, right.
Right. But it's just not cool, you know, because I talk all day and he hasn't talked to anybody all day.
Right.
Right. So I really, like, the best way to love him is to really go, how was your day? And just to let him tell me everything. Right.
Right.
It's just a much healthier dynamic for both of us. And it makes him really happy. Right. So, but that's not my instinct.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's not my knee jerk. My knee jerk is self-centered. Right. And I don't, it's just like, that's one of my glitches. Right. I have many, if you want the list of all of them that need promises, including, you know, I need a sex promise. Not because the sex isn't great. It's totally fun. It's because I need to be made to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I also need to be made to exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I have to have a promise or I won't go. I'd rather starve than exercise. Right. That's sick.
So what is your consequence if you don't exercise?
Well, I have to confess it. That's more than enough for me.
Right.
I have to tell, you know, so if I don't keep my promise, I have to tell basically my sister or David.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like,
mm-hmm.
I tell everybody, I don't break that promise. The good news about me is I'm not breaking promises.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. I walk my talk and but I'm not an example of someone who's perfect. I'm an example of someone who's absolutely imperfect, who really is doing the work.
Right.
Of making myself deal with being happy, because I could start to get lazy about everything.
Mm-hmm.
I could get fat. I could get lazy. I could lose my sex life. I could lose fun with my kids. I could lose a lot of things.
You say that, this is another quote of yours, start facing the way you lie. Humans are hysterically dark and no one talks about it. It's ridiculous. Dark in what way? Like they like to have what you call their pity parties, where they just sort of want to...
It's literally, you smiled at your sister, you hugged her, you go, you look great, oh my God, it's so good to see you. And what you say in your head is, dang, she gained 10 pounds. What happened to her? She smells funny.
So wait. That's what you mean, that humans are dark?
Yeah, like what you're really saying in your head, you wouldn't say to someone out loud.
Meaning that we kind of go to the negative and that's what we sit with.
Who even knows what you're doing in there?
But what do you mean by dark? Dark to me means...
Dark is snarky, sarcastic,
okay.
Vindictive,
okay.
Jealous.
Right.
Competitive, envious.
Is jealousy or envy the single biggest negative trait that you have to deal with in coaching people?
No, not at all.
What is?
Self-loathing.
Not smart enough, not skinny enough, not whatever.
Self-loathing, like, I can't believe, like, just self-haters, right? It's a lot of, like, A personalities that hate themselves, or they are being lazy, but then they're running a pity party, like, they can't fix it, I'm broken. Right, like, what's wrong with me?
So they're just being lazy, but they don't want to own their laziness, is what you're saying.
There's a voice in your head,
mm-hmm.
that unless you understand it and get it under new management, you're literally what I would call mostly not that conscious. You're not that conscious to the dynamics of being human.
Are there benefits to therapy in your mind? Are there benefits to therapy, traditional therapy?
I would say yes, right? Mm-hmm. I would say yes. I have no, but I really can't speak about it. You know, my parents put me in therapy when I was in high school and I loved it.
And why did they put you in therapy?
Because I was lying.
Mm-hmm. there you go.
Are you kidding? I was a fantastic liar.
Yeah.
I literally got caught. What did I get caught to? I mean, I got caught 13 coming home from, like, I was at my boyfriend's in Washington, D.C. And went on a train and lied about it to everybody.
How old are you?
I was 13.
Wow. That's young.
Right. I was a badass. Come on.
Wow. Well, it doesn't surprise me, though.
I only got caught, not because anything went wrong, but they found a like, I didn't throw out the ticket.
Classic.
Right? Like, it was in my bag somewhere.
Ah, that's awesome.
The ticket and was like, what? And then, you know, Dr. Pusar entered the picture.
And what did you get out of that at that age? Did it help you in any way, you think?
Well, it did teach me what I didn't like about therapy in the end,
Which is
right?
what?
Like, I did break up with my therapist. There was a day when I finally figured out that all of my lying is keeping everything perpetuating. Like, I had that revelation, like, I am perpetuating all of this by not telling the truth to everyone, including my parents. Include, like, if I just told the truth, my whole life would blow up and I'd be free. Right? Like, I'd actually be free. People could hate me for what they like. They could, everyone would have the right, like, I could blow up my life. And he thought I was insane. So for three sessions, he tried to talk me out of telling the truth.
And the truth you wanted to tell was what at that time?
You know, sex, drugs, rock and roll.
Yeah. And you
Right?
wanted to tell,
Like, you know, stealing.
yeah. You wanted to tell that to your parents.
I was going to tell everything. Everything. Like, I wanted out of my prison. And that was like the beginning of my, you know.
So tell me why that told you that therapy can, what your thoughts are on therapy. I know you're not a therapist, and I know you're not advocating people don't take therapy, but there is a sort of a, and to me, and someone that did this with you and also is on therapy, like you, there is a, whether you want to admit it or like it, to hear it or not, in my mind, I think for some people, there is a sort of a relationship between the kind of thing you do and what therapist does. And if you are somebody in therapy and you're getting coached by a Lauren Zander, how do those two things coexist?
So, most therapists, and this is just my what I think. This isn't even true. I like can't even bet on it. Okay.
Right.
I really am a coach, which means I can tell you what to do, and you make agreements with me.
Right.
Right. So I put a person in true contracts, promises, and with consequences, and I hold them accountable to making those changes, having those conversations, taking those actions. So what I care about in coaching and through the whole method is about what you're doing with your life every minute of the day, right? Including that voice in your head and how you're going to engage with it. So people send me their, you know, daily, I get daily inner dialogues from people, right? Like, what did that voice say, especially in an area where you're suffering? Like, so for, you know, so many people, it's they're 40 pounds overweight, and that voice in their head, the brat in their head, they have no power over. And so they come to me to help them. So I put them on the right diet. Thank you, Dr. Hyman. And I put them on that diet. And then but it's not the diet, it's you. Maybe it's you, right? Is the whole point. And can I get you to wake up to you could love an apple and you can hate cheesecake? It isn't true that you don't have that power. You actually have that power. You actually live in your own mind. There is no is way it has to be. As a matter of fact, you can take over all of the conversation in that head of yours. You can take it over. That doesn't mean you can even direct it. If there's so much more power and freedom that no one's investigating because they're running amok with that inner dialogue that's getting them whatever their cookie. Right? So I break in to your mainframe. Right. And but I get you to break in. I, you know, when I was in therapy and what was different, which is why I ultimately broke up with him, was he was helping me navigate all of my lies. Right. And he was helping me, like, so I really can't tell my mother this because of this, this, and this, and this, because my mother's so this. Really, tell me more about your mother.
Right.
Right. So it was actually creating more narrative that still included lying.
Is that too a convenient a rationalization or whatever you want to call it in therapy to sort of go to your relationship with your parents and specifically your mother? Because I've had those conversations with therapists about like, well, a lot of this traces back to your mother and her. The way she treated your brother and sister, and you witnessed that, and the way she treated you, and the way she treated her father. Is that sort of too convenient, in your mind? I know it's your opinion. I mean, you know, I know it's your
I
opinion.
just, it's not what I do. It's not how I break you into driving today in your own life.
Right.
Right? Like, I have very real agendas that I'm helping you with, which is I make you write out all 12 area dreams, your dreams, like your true vision for how you want your life to be. And then I make you rate it. Like, where are you today on that vision?
Mm-hmm.
Most people can't even write a vision.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're so lost in how bad it is, or like, you know, I finally can fit into a pair of jeans that I like.
Right.
That's your body dream.
Right.
You know, you could love exercising. You could love eating healthy. You could like, oh my God, you don't understand. And then we really do have to do some deep old work.
Mm.
But the way I do deep old work is I go there. Listen, you have been running a narrative about your body and food since you were little. So first, just write a purge out. Write out everything you think is wrong with the world, bodies, images. Oh, you hate Vogue, right? Like you'd be amazed at what people have to say is the reason they're 30 pounds overweight.
And are all those reasons legitimate?
All of those reasons are cockamamie.
Yeah, lies. Yeah.
It's just cockamamie is you've never sorted it all out.
Mm.
Right? You've never sorted it all out. And trust me, I have a name for what I'd rather you call it.
Mm-hmm.
An addict. Yeah. Right? An addict thinks they don't have any power.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that thing really does, they need two drinks in order to have fun.
Right.
Right. It isn't like, can you have, like, I can't have fun without two drinks. And then you sit there and suffer if you're not drinking at the party.
Right.
Right. You don't go, maybe it's me. Mm-hmm. You go, I need two drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's what we're breaking into, all the bad habits and all the crap that stops you from actually having fun with or without drinks.
Right. And how often do the recidivism rate for you with people? I mean, sort of lapsing back, once you feel like someone's gotten it, or they feel like they've gotten it, whether it's, you know, getting their weight issue under control or whatever, do you find that people tend to lapse back quite a bit? Or it depends person to person? Like, how does that play itself out?
That's a really good question. If a person really is an addict in an area, okay?
Mm.
They can never not deal with it.
It's always going to be part of your life and your makeup.
You would better be scared of it for the rest of your life.
Right. That's what you would tell me about.
So if you're capable of hitting a massage parlor, right, and you blame your wife for it, right, like if you're capable of that, but you only do it 3 times a year, you know, what do I think, right, and then you stopped, and then you stopped talking to me. Right. You know, and then you even had a good year and you even know it made you happy. But then you had that fight and you're not talking to me anymore. What are the odds you'll go back to the massage parlor?
Mm.
Yeah, they're not good.
Right.
Like you figured out how to give your wife your like it depends on how deep you dealt with the issue and how much you got freed up from the issue and how much you're an addict.
But people lapse. I mean, people are human beings, right? So there are I can't imagine that you expect people
no,
to.
No, I think people. I don't know. I mean, I think people. Yes, people lapse.
Mm.
Absolutely, people fall back. When you're upset, you're going to gain the 15 pounds if that's what you do when you get upset.
Right.
It is very. But yeah, that's true.
All right. Well, listen. People need to, if anybody listening to this have any issues, which I'm assuming everybody does, they need to, first of all, get the book. Maybe it's you. Cut the crap. Face your fears. Love your life. I love the cut the crap. That's so classic. That's so you. That's going to be on your, I don't want to sound maudlin, but that should be on your tombstone. Just
aww.
Cut the crap. And then that's your
cut
message
the
to the world.
Cut crap.
Yeah. And also, go to the Handel Group online if people want to get coaching. Your sister's coach, they're great, great human beings and really helped me. And tell people how they can go and find coaching from you guys.
Really, all you have to do is go to the website and you can get a free consultation. Tell them how much money you have. Like if you have nothing, we have great options. If you're broke, if you want the best, right? So we run the gamut, and then we go into corporations. We have a long history of fixing businesses or helping executives, right? Really get ahead, Right. So we're, you know, we've taught, you know, I have two courses that have been taught and still are taught at Stanford Business School. And I did all the development of this at MIT.
Yes.
Right? So I have, you know, so if I don't, I shouldn't sound like I'm a hillbilly.
And it's, you know, no, you don't. What are you, crazy? You don't. And it's over 30, it's in over 35 universities as well, this method that you're teaching. So, and it's good. You'll be aggravated, especially if you have Lauren as a coach. You'll get aggravated with her.
Then you'll, not everybody should have me.
Yeah, you'll yes, exactly. You're an acquired taste, as they say.
I have much nicer coaches than
that. And then she yells at you, and then you hang up, and
I yell at you.
You yell at me, right? And then can you hang up, and you're going, "What the fuck? Why am I doing this?" And then you kind of circle back, and then you calm down. And it's Handel, H-A-N-D-E-L, everybody, not like Handel. It's Handel Group, and go online and get the book. And anybody listening to this, you definitely have issues. So you need to go to my dear, dear friend who I love to death, Lauren, and get someone to help you. Or if nothing else, just give some thought to what we talked about. That's the whole reason we're doing this, and now we want people to get Lauren's book. So that is it. We're going to do another one of these. We should do these more like semi-regularly so that we can tell people what's going on in the world and everything else.
And then we really could do fun sessions, right? Like talk about certain subjects too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Coaching content, which could be a lot of fun rather than generalizing what's happening overall.
Oh, you mean like pick a specific thing? You mean that I'm dealing with, or just in general that people?
Hey man, this is your show. However you.
Jesus, no. Oh, I'm perfect now. I'm 100% fixed. Are you kidding? There's no issue. All right. This is Lauren Zander, co-founder of Handel Group. The book is Maybe It's You. Cut the Crap. Face Your Fears. Love Your Life. Don't have a pity party. Get out of your own way. Stay out of your buckets. Stop sucking your thumb.
You know what, Paul? You are the only one who has ever... You created buckets. There is no one else who gets buckets.
I got buckets, and I got Neville. And I listen to Neville still. Neville's a philosopher, and you guys gave me some tapes, and it's on my phone, and Neville helps when I kind of get a whatever. But I'm pretty much
I put on Neville every day to take a shower.
Do you really?
Yeah, I like dreaming and inventing and thinking out of the box.
Yeah.
All the time, and I mean, I'm not kidding. I listen to it 5 days a week, Paul.
I need more. I only got like two sessions, by the way. I got to get the rest of them, or if there's more.
My favorite one, my latest favorite one that I've been addicted to is, Feeling is the Secret by Neville Goddard.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling is the Secret, and it's an audio book, but it's recorded by a guy named Jason McCormick or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a much better, like he can, it actually sounds good
because
Neville is a kind of a strange guy.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to listen to him. Mm. You're like, you have to get over him to listen to him. So this is a much better recording, and it talks about, it's brilliant. It's my favorite one.
Wait, so it's this. So it's this guy McCormick doing the reading, but it's Neville's work, and it's called "Feeling Is the Secret."
Yep.
And
Feeling is the Secret.
It's an audiobook.
It's an audiobook.
All right.
25 minutes long, and it'll rock you.
It's got all the good Neville stuff. It's like the best of Neville.
No, it's even, Paul. It's even better. It explains that your subconscious is what happens when you're sleeping, and how to impact conscious and subconscious so that you're creating the reality you want, because you always are, and you're creating whatever's happening in your life. So it's very clear, and it impacts the way you can go to sleep at night.
Right, but it's a chicken or the egg. Like when I have stuff happening during the day that's not going well, it spills over into my dreams sometimes, and then there's like an extension of that negative thing happening in my dream. So the dream doesn't necessarily cause it. It's chicken or egg, no?
No, but if you go listen to that recording, it'll tell you how to fix exactly what you just said.
Okay, and if it doesn't fix it,
It agrees with you completely, Paul. And it explains it, and it tells you how to fix it.
All right, if it doesn't fix it, I'm going to call you and complain.
Paul, just do what it says.
All right, see, here we go.
All right, we're going to do sessions on the show, and then people can
make Alyssa follow up with you.
Oh my God, people can chart my. I'm fine though. I'm 100% cured.
I heard your list of all the things happening in your career, and I think you are right.
Yeah, you know, I'm still not exactly where I want to be, but I can't. I gotta not let that sort of cloud the other stuff. So that's
Overachievers. Overachievers are famous for only noticing what's upsetting.
Yes, that's exact. That would fit me to a T. Absolutely. Yeah. All right, go buy the book. Yeah, I like. You know, I'm. It's. You know. It's because and then sometimes you feel like there's a clock and I got to get there. And with every day goes by.
There's a clock?
Yeah, there's a clock. And then
it's always beating you.
And then there's a thing. And I just,
bucket.
Yeah, there's a bucket. And then there's another bucket. You should have a chapter called Buckets and then just put my we could talk about all the little buckets that I've had. But also the other thing is that sometimes the work can be exhausting because you're just trying to live your life, but then you have to like retrain your brain to think a better way. And that can be tiring sometimes, you know, that was the other thing I found, but it was good.
Only the very voice who doesn't want to do it says that.
No, I know, but I did it. I'm cured now. So I'm 100%.
But you understand, right? Like, oh, does it need a drink too?
Yeah. Yeah. And a drink and a pizza. All right. Maybe It's You is the book. It's on Amazon. It's everywhere. Cut the crap. Face your fears. Love your life. And
you can also get it in Barnes & Noble.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember the process you went through to get the book written. And it was emblematic of what a life struggle is. You know, you kind of started it. Then it was over here. Then it was over there. And then you got it done. And you never...
I had three book proposals I never turned in because I never thought they were good enough.
Right. And but you never sort of backed down from it, and you got it done. I'm really happy for you and proud of you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, go talk to Lauren's people or Lauren. She'll help you fix everything, and then you'll be just like me. All right. Lauren Zander. Love you.
I love you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. All right, that was Lauren Zander. I hope you learned something. I hope you check out her book and look her up online. There's a lot. I used it a bit, and I can tell you that I'm 1% better. No, I'm actually better because of it. I kind of been leading a little bit less stressful life in terms of like my own stuff and being able to have goals and set them and all that stuff and not go crazy so much. You know, but we're all crazy. All right, I'm going to go try to load a dishwasher again. And if you never hear from me again, you'll know why. All right, see you next week.
A Westwood One podcast production.